From atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for May 4th in the year of our Lord, 2021. This is hour two of two, and our goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country on your radio in the traditions of our founding fathers. All right, ladies and gentlemen, LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net, the two websites to promote. Donate liberally, would you please? Every penny will be used to grow our presence in the media as we tell the tale of liberty. Now our guest, Patrick Simmons. And Patrick Simmons is with the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. Find out if you live in a right-to-work state, ladies and gentlemen, today. Righttowork.org to learn more about that. You know what, folks? Do you live in a right-to-work state? You got to ask yourself that. Right now, 27 states protect workers' freedom. That's good news. Welcome, Patrick.
Good morning, Sam. Great to be with you again.
Oh, there's so much to talk about. There's so little time, my friend. Headline, union officials plead guilty to violent extortion. A guy by the name of Williamson and another guy named Veach both pleaded guilty for conspiracy to commit Hobbs Act extortion. A former union official by the name of Thomas Williamson, Sr., was sentenced to 4 years in prison for beating and extorting non-union workers. That's according to a Department of Justice press release. Williamson initially tried to verbally intimidate the workers at the construction site. Then he went to the church that was in the question, and he tried to get them to agree to help, you know, the union get the project, but no. Unsuccessful, Williamson returned to the site a day later with his union 495 buddy Jeffrey Veach. And then they supervised union members as they beat the non-union workers, ladies and gentlemen. This is insanity news in our modern times, and nobody's heard about it. Patrick?
Yeah, this is an interesting story, and unfortunately, it's a glimpse into the go-to tactics that we see by so many unions, and they think that these jobs belong to them, not to the workers who freely choose to take them. And they say if you're hiring workers who aren't paying us money, that's according to union bosses like this, that's wrong, and they will go to very extreme ends to try and enforce their fiefdom there. In this case, a number of workers ended up getting beat up. These two union officials initially raised, and we've talked about this before, they raised the fact that under federal law, a lot of union violence is actually exempt from federal racketeering and extortion. In this case, the judge, the issue was the judge said, well, because this was these workers, they weren't entitled to this job. If this was a union job already and they had, conducted violence in as part of maybe seeking a union contract, that might have been okay. But this type of extortion didn't fall under that loophole. But the whole situation is just another demonstration that, you know, union bosses, of course, they claim to speak for workers and be about what's best for workers. But this is an organization and that their move is give us what we want or else. And for a lot of workers in non-right-to-work states, the or else is we'll have you fired. But sometimes it's we're going to send you to the hospital. Sometimes it's, something's going to happen to your pet overnight. Or, you know, there's going to be your tires suddenly. You're going to get a lot of flat tires all of a sudden. And unfortunately, this is just one of the latest examples of those thuggish tactics that that union bosses turn to so often when they don't get what they want.
And I bring this up because we talk about this on the radio a lot, and I mentioned the threats, the intimidation and abuses, and, you know, Patrick has documented that it is reality. This is the kind of the go-to first move, the mode of operandus for these people, the lead unions and stuff like that, and how government has really been in their back pocket to give them, quote, special protections and privileges and authority to behave in such violent, abusive, hostile manner. But I think a lot of our listeners might think, oh, Sam, come on. I know you're kind of overstating the issue. They don't really beat people up and really get that crazy, do they? And the answer is yes, they do. That's exactly the point. They do. Union officials plead guilty to violent extortion. And that's why we have this whole, what's this act called or whatever? Hobbs Act extortion. Yeah. That's why this whole Hobbs Act, Act exists, mm-hmm. right? Tell us a little bit about the Hobbs Act, because I think it's important to kind of understand.
Sure. Well, the Hobbs Act is just the federal statute that deals with extortionate violence. And it applies to everyone, except in some instances, union officials. And this is comes out of a 1970 Supreme Court decision called Edmunds. And the U.S. Supreme Court said that although normally if you extort someone and say, you know, pay us money or we're going to, you know, damage your property. And, you know, I think that the Edmunds case, actually what happened there was union thugs were taking a high powered rifle and shooting out transformers outside of manufacturing plants. And they were doing this all across multiple instances. In multiple states, and finally they got prosecuted and said, this is extortionate violence. You're demanding a contract and you're blowing up, transformers that's in order to stop these places from getting electricity. And went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, well, the National Labor Relations Act is what applies to what these workers are doing. And they were seeking legitimate, I think it's the phrase is legitimate union objectives, because they were seeking this union contract. And so it doesn't matter what tactics they use. It doesn't matter that they were literally taking a high-powered rifle and shooting out electrical wires. It doesn't matter in some instances if it's actual, a human getting sent to the hospital, to the morgue, that it can be. The Hobbs Act cannot apply in some of those instances if the union is after something that they could otherwise get legally. Now, that seems like a pretty crazy standard. I could legally make $1 million. It doesn't make it somehow not extortion if I go to someone and say, I'm going to beat you up if you don't give me that money. But under the twisted labor laws in this country, that is unfortunately how it often works. And then you end up on these small technicalities, like in this case, was the school that was part of this church. If it had been union already, would this violence have been part of a legitimate union objective? Maybe, but because these were non-union workers in Indiana, a right to work state, by the way, who were not paying dues to the union, didn't join the union. Then when these two union thugs, union officials came in and declared it their territory, the judge said that the Edmunds exemption to the Hobbs Act didn't apply. But they raised it in their case. And it's just another example of why there is a bill, by the way, that I think it will probably be introduced around Labor Day. Generally, that's when it's introduced in Congress. To close that loophole, but it's really badly needed, because unfortunately the Supreme Court created this, and it's something that Congress needs to fix.
It's also something that we the people need to be aware of, because I think education matters about this. You know, when people are kind of up in arms saying, you know what, we got to have a right to work state, Rand Paul, other senators and Congress members, let's work on this. You know what? Right to work is critical. We can't have unions forcing their agenda by violence. Okay, that's what the Hobbs Act was designed to prevent, partially. But the unions still get too wide of a berth on this. And we the people need to be aware and shut that down. You know, if enough workers had stood up a little bit earlier, maybe to these union officials, and they had made it more public that, hey, we're getting intimidated here. Then it might have not gone to that level or that extreme, because the unions are smart and they know they don't want coverage for this. And if we give coverage, I remember years ago, I saw a union demonstration taking place. And I walked over to the union official with a tape recorder in hand and said, "Hey, man, I'm a news reporter. And I want to get kind of what's going on here. What are you guys doing? Who's doing what?" And I, you know, I think that kind of transparency and that kind of shining the light makes a big difference in how they'll behave.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. I think, you know, on one hand, the public at large probably, you know, a lot of people think that this type of stuff is a thing of the past. This is, you know, Jimmy Hoffa and the Teamsters in the 60s and 70s and mobbed up unions. But this stuff takes place all the time. And it's, you know, it doesn't get the attention it deserves. You know, this just happened the other day. And a lot of people, this act happened in 2016. But, you know, this was just yesterday that this the sentence came down. And, you know, it's not front page news. I mean, there have been other instances. There was a Quaker meeting house burnt down in Pennsylvania recently as part of a union dispute. And I think the unions are being prosecuted there. We've seen Teamsters guys getting off on the Edmunds Hobbs Act exemption up in Boston. They shot the TV show Top Chef up there, and they threatened them, and they said, "We're going to punch that pretty little face in," and then ultimately they got off because they said, "Oh, well, that was a legitimate union objective they were seeking." And so the Freedom of Union Violence Act is really needed to close that loophole.
We got to expose it, ladies and gentlemen, and create accountability. That's where it starts, by we the people demanding accountability. Righttowork.org, Patrick Simmons on your radio, continuing in seconds.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is, again, the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Patrick Simmons, righttowork.org on your radio with me. 27 states have right to work. We need to make it national. Rand Paul working on it. We're trying to help at Liberty Roundtable Live as well. There's so much to cover. The unions are out of control, folks, and if you think that's years gone by and it's not happening, it's happening right now. Union officials plead guilty to violent extortion just recently here. This is new right now. We got to be aware. We got to create transparency. I don't know how you say this lady's name. Is it Roggie Dunn?
I'm not sure.
Was interviewed on Fox 26 Houston. Can employers require vaccinations? This kind of relates too, because it's going to come down to, can you, the union mandate vaccinations, right?
Yeah, certainly. I think we might see that. I mean, it's an interesting situation. You've got, on one hand, they're trying to mandate it. And then you see, for example, public schools, I mean, all across the country, teachers union saying, you know, not until every kid is vaccinated, are we going to go in? And it's a real power grab by union officials that have tried to use COVID to get other things that are completely unrelated to COVID, but use it as a tool to grab more power.
The game being played right now, Patrick, I find this interesting, is the government says, no, we don't, and we can't, and we won't mandate vaccines. However, they're really putting pressure behind the scenes on big business to mandate. And if you get, you know, 5 or 10 big businesses in the modern day to mandate vaccines, it's going to force a sea change across the country. And that they're going to say, well, government didn't do it, private sector did. And private sector's, well, they're going to get, you know, who knows what behind the scenes and how all that's going to pan out, we don't know. But it's kind of a fascist play, if you will. The reason that I bring this up is because they can lean on the unions too. And if they lean on the union choke point, that really puts a significant number of government officials, a significant number of educational officials, and then a certain number of big business battles all under one, quote, unionized rollout behind the scenes partnership push. Am I crazy on this?
No, I think that's, it's a kind of the natural progression of the one size fits all monopoly unionism that is, unfortunately, the cornerstone of how, you know, federal labor law and union laws work in this country. The whole, even in right to work states and even in the public sector where you can't have forced dues, the union is given the power to enter into a binding contract on every single worker, not just union members, so not voluntary union members, but people who want nothing to do with it. And, you see, it can be about work rules. It's about who gets promoted and fired. But it could also be about things like, what shots you have to have to be in the office. And, we were talking there, I briefly mentioned the teachers unions doing this. But, you know, that may be just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to, you got unions who are so dependent on the government for their power. That's where they get this monopoly to begin with. It's the government enforced monopoly over workers and over businesses. Of course, in the non-right to work states, it's a government granted power that lets them tell every single worker pay up or be fired. And so when they're that dependent on the government for power, they're also kind of at the whim of the government, you know, and if the government says you better push this vaccine or whatever policy on all your people, it's not going to be about what individual workers want. It's going to be about what the government wants, because that's the source of union bosses' power to begin with.
You better keep an eye, because I'm predicting, write it down, remember who warned you first, that I'm predicting the unions will be used in partnership with big business. The government will try to claim they don't have their hands dirty in this, but it'll be a trifecta, to say the least. And behind the scenes, they will put pressure on and start to work on more mandating of vaccines to the airlines, to the train, transportation sector, through the teachers union sector, through big business sector, etc. And I'm telling you right now, it's going to be a very difficult battle for us to fight. And hopefully people like righttowork.org and others can dig into this and get some facts on, the behind the scenes details. Sometimes it takes court cases to get out the hidden details of this. They don't do it publicly and transparently. They usually do it kind of by hook or by crook. And sometimes it takes court cases to get the facts on the table, etc. So that's something worth keeping an eye on. Alabama, Amazon workers vote overwhelmingly against the union and shut it down. Patrick?
Yeah, this is, a really interesting case. I mean, this was this big vote there, thousands of workers eligible to vote. Ultimately, I think it was around 12% of all the workers voted for the union. They lost by over 2-1 margin. And you had Bernie Sanders on the ground talking about it. You had Joe Biden making comments from the White House, weighing in on the union side. And despite all that, these workers just wanted nothing to do with the union. They looked at their jobs. They looked at their other options. They saw that, you know, in their community, Amazon jobs were sought after. They largely were happy with them. And they said, why do we want to bring in an outside union that is more interested in what's going on in Washington, D.C., than what's happening in Bessemer, Alabama? And they sent them packing. Now, there's actually going to be a hearing this week. The union is seeking to overturn the vote. That's unfortunately not that uncommon. It's really fairly ironic. There are two main complaints. One, they didn't like the fact that too many workers were eligible to vote. There were a lot of seasonal employees there, and they were able to vote as well. So too many people voted is one of the union complaints. One of the reasons they're specifically seeking to overturn the vote is that there was a mailbox placed right outside the plant so that workers could easily cast their votes in the mail. These types of elections used to be done in person, but now a lot of them are done with mail-in ballots because of COVID. And the union didn't like the fact that the mailbox was put right outside the plant, and they felt that made it too easy for workers to vote. And so it's really a pretty, you know, a cynical position that the union's taking here. But ultimately, I think these workers spoke quite loudly. They didn't want this union. They didn't want this outside union in their workplace. And, you know, I think some of them said, look, the job's not perfect, but we think we're better off without them. And fundamentally, that's a decision that if the union were actually about workers, they would respect. But they're instead at the National Labor Relations Board this week in their efforts to overturn the vote. So we'll see how that plays out. But definitely a big high profile loss for organized labor. They had every single politician they wanted, some celebrities down there. And these workers just ultimately said, no, you want to make this into some big display for, you know, pushing your agenda in Washington, D.C., but this is not what's best for us.
The interesting thing about this is it was a resounding rejection with all the stops pulled out by the unions. I think that basically people got transparent information, and I really believe that the key to this exercise is when people get the real information, then they reject unions more than not, by far. Because these unions are not voluntary join or leave unions. They're mandated, forced unions. And I expect the fat lady hasn't sung on this one yet. I think what we're going to see, though, is the union try to come back in some way to still force their agenda, don't you think? They're not going to give up that easy, even though it was a beating almost, pardon the term. But it was resounding. Yeah. But I don't think we've seen the end of it, is what I'm saying, Patrick. What do you think?
No, I absolutely agree. This is the first step. Amazon has become, you know, one of the, I think the second largest employer in the country, only behind Walmart. The unions are not going to give up that dream of, you know, those millions of workers and trying to get them. And they thought this was just step one. You know, whether it's back at this plant again or other facilities, they definitely see unionizing Amazon as one of their long-term objectives. And that's also why they're pushing the PRO Act in Congress, because this is a bill that would shut down workers' ability to get more information and hear both sides. It would let the union skip the secret ballot vote and install their power over every worker through card check, where they go around 1, 2, 3 at a time, pressure someone to sign a card, and then be able to use that card as a vote. So, you know, whether it's twisting the law and making it more in their favor or just, you know, being relentless and seeking to overturn losses and until they get the vote they want, this is just the tip.
Do you have a couple extra quick minutes, Patrick?
Sure.
All right, stay there. I want to. What other cases and issues do we need to know about from Patrick Simmons? We'll find out in seconds on your radio, righttowork.org.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
An overpass carrying a subway train collapsed in Mexico City late Monday night, killing dozens of people, including children. According to local government officials, scores of people have been hospitalized, seven of whom are in serious condition. The train was traveling on an elevated part of the city's rapid transit system when part of the overpass collapsed onto traffic below. Sparking inflation concerns, the Treasury Department says it's expected to borrow $463 billion in the current April to June quarter and $2.28 trillion for the full budget year as the government finances continued pandemic relief measures. The Treasury on Monday projected a borrowing need of $821 billion for the July through September quarter. The massive core of a Chinese rocket used last week is falling out of orbit, and where it lands is anybody's guess. The 100-foot-long object, weighing about 21 metric tons, will re-enter Earth within weeks, and it will probably crash somewhere. USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Wayne Allyn, and I'm in the best shape of my life. I love working out hard every day, but I turned 60 this year, and working out can cause some serious aches and pains. I was commiserating with my buddy Jay Schrader, the Super Bowl champion and former Raiders quarterback, about the challenges of staying in great shape for anyone over age 50. Jay said I had to try SonsOfLibertyCBD.com, and it would heal my body, mind, and soul. He was right. No more aches and pains. I feel like $1 million. Finding quality CBD, not easy, but Sons of Liberty CBD, highest quality CBD I've ever seen. CBD is not pot. It won't get you high. It's 100% legal. It's 100% American made. CBD is mainstream, and it works. For my listeners, SonsOfLibertyCBD.com is offering a discount of 15% off every product if you use the code WAR15 at checkout. Even better, you can combine this discount with your subscription discount for 25% off. Please support veteran-owned, service-disabled, small business, Sons of Liberty, CBD.com. Just say WAR15 to get 25% off.
With a vaccine update, Dan Naraki reports.
The latest data from the CDC shows that 44% of Americans have received at least one dose of COVID vaccine, with nearly 32% of all adults fully vaccinated. Health experts have said that number would need to be between 70 and 80% for the nation to reach a herd immunity against the virus, but it may not be necessary to reach that level to be able to return to pre-pandemic life. Dr. Ashish Jha says that he believes we can reach herd immunity, but the dean of the Brown University School of Public Health tells CNBC that current efforts should still be able to drive infections down to a manageable level.
First, I do think that we can get there. Again, we just got to keep vaccinating, and I know that a lot of people are unsure, but if we get people off the fence and get vaccinated, I think we can get there. Second is, we don't have to get to herd immunity to get much of our lives back. Even if we get into the 60s and 70s in terms of vaccinations, I think it's going to make a massive difference. Infection numbers, we're going to plummet, maybe even earlier than that. So be great to get to herd immunity, but I'm okay if we don't.
USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Patrick Simmons with us, righttowork.org, doing a phenomenal job. We've covered the Alabama case, rejecting unions outright, the abusive case where unions are beating people up. One guy had his jaw really smashed up and beat up, but it's all codified by government. On one hand, government backs the extreme violence and giving the union special privilege. On the other hand, there's laws against such violence. And the bottom line is these violent thug unionists went to jail. Appropriately so, I might add, and we've got to stop the violence. The best way is to shine the light of transparency on it. The best way is to back people who are working on right to work, righttowork.org. In 27 states, you have a right to work now, in other states, you don't. But the unions are getting very bold, and I believe the unions will be used as a linchpin to try to force vaccines on us all. Beware, write it down, remember who warned you first. I'm for unions if they're a free choice, meaning you can leave and join, and if they're doing a good job for you, great. I understand the employer needs representation. I understand sometimes that, you know what, it's not a fair fight when the boss holds all the cards. I get it, okay? So I don't have a problem with that. My problem is the force issue. My problem is the backed by government issue, where you got unions and big business and government all together in a trifecta against you, the lowly worker. And all the while smiling in your face, acting like they're just after your best interest, when the facts are contrary, to say the least. The lobbying by unions is out of control on certain sides of the political discussions and more. So that's kind of the summary there. I wanted to ask Patrick really quick if there's any other quick cases that he wanted to mention that they're working on. But first, a caller jumped in from Utah. Chris, you got a question for Patrick?
Yes, sir, Sam. I would like to know what that relationship is that the unions have with the government that allows them to benefit from the monopoly of force that government offers, because I've never had it articulated to me. Or could you refer me to a website, to your website perhaps, to learn more about that?
Sure. Well, yeah, it's what's called, and this comes out of the National Labor Relations Act, but it's also the same scheme used for a lot of public sector labor laws, both for federal employees, but also at the state and local level. And it's what's referred to as exclusive representation, also known as monopoly bargaining. And basically what it means is that, you know, there can be, let's say there's a vote, sometimes there's a vote, sometimes not, but so let's say that there's 100 workers in a workplace, and enough of them say, hey, we want to hold an election to see if we want to have a union in this workplace. And so maybe 50 of them vote and 30 of them vote for the union and 20 of them vote against it. Well, that 30 workers is enough for all 100 to now be covered by the union monopoly. And that's enforced by government. And the employer then has to talk to that union, and the union can agree to a contract that applies to each and every worker, even the ones who didn't vote, even the ones who voted against it. And whatever contract they have and come up with applies to them. And so that's what we refer to as monopoly representation. It doesn't matter that many of those workers didn't want the union, that they're not union members. It doesn't matter that they may be getting blocked from a promotion or raise by that union contract. It doesn't matter that the union contract may say you have the least seniority, and therefore anytime there's a layoff, you're the first one to lose your job. That contract applies to each and every one of them. And that takes place in the private sector under the National Labor Relations Act. It also takes place in the government sector. So that's where you see schools, public teachers who are unionized. And a lot of them maybe, you know, were unionized 30, 40 years ago. So these current workers never even had a vote, these teachers. But the union has the power to contract on their behalf. You know, that's a really significant power. I mean, think about power of attorney and who you would trust with the power to enter into binding contracts for you. You know, there wouldn't be very many people, maybe, you know, a spouse, a parent, a trusted family member or friend, maybe an attorney you really trust, but certainly not just any attorney. And yet the unions are granted that power over workers, over those workers' objections.
And there's no doubt it's more abusive in a non-right to work state than it is a right to work state. It's more abusive in the public government sector versus the private sector, but it exists, and it does so via the National Labor Relations Board, via the bargaining rules and guidelines in employer/employee contract law, etc. But I want to broaden it even further because it relates to not only do they get enabled by certain acts and certain rules and guidelines and et cetera, in government, but they also get special privilege by, for example, the Hobbs Act, extortion. Okay, that's an act to stop people from violent abuse of one another. But the union's got a special opt-out privilege in most cases, as Patrick told us. So it's not only laws that enable them, it's laws that give them exceptions and protects them. When we find out something's egregious, we get a law to stop it. And then, but they get their own special privilege related to it. So it's laws that are not only giving them authority, but it's laws that are protecting them and getting them out of accountability on the other side of the coin, Patrick. So I wanted to broaden the answer slightly. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, that's right, Sam. And I mean, you know, a couple examples are, let's say a worker in a unionized workplace goes to their boss directly and says, hey, you know, look, I'd like to work out a contract with you. I think I deserve a raise. If the employer talked to them at all about that, the union can go to the federal government and say they're violating our exclusive representation powers by talking directly to this worker. And so, you know, it's really that extreme. In a non-right to work state, if a company says, look, we'll negotiate a contract, but just so you know, we're not going to agree to a forced dues clause. You know, we're not going to force everyone to pay you money in whatever contract we end up with. They would go to the National Labor Relations Board and say, the company committed an unfair labor practice charge by not negotiating with us over forcing the workers to pay us money. So that's how extreme and heavy-handed the government is.
But they wouldn't say forcing the workers to pay us money, although that's the facts. What they would say is from us providing representation for them and having the funding to do so. Right?
Right. But, of course, as we've discussed, that's unwanted representation in many instances. And that gets to the core problem.
I just want people to understand that on the other side of the coin, when they pitch it, I just want to explain, Patrick, when they pitch it, they're not pitching it in the way we're telling you to some degree there. They're using polite language, though. They don't just say, yeah, we want to force everybody, government, help us. They're like, no, we need to represent these people, and it's required to have funding to do so. And they couch it in very nice language, even though the hook is in the language for sure.
Yeah, that's right. They call it
interesting
union security clauses, but it's just about whether a worker can be fired for not paying money to the union.
All right. Any final follow-up there, Chris, and then we'll let you fly.
Yeah. So, no, I think you've answered the question. Do you have a website, Patrick, that I can go to that explains what you've just explained to me?
Yeah. Sure. So if you go to righttowork.org or nrtw.org, that's the National Right to Work Foundation website. And I believe in the frequently asked questions, we talk a little bit about monopoly bargaining, exclusive representation, and how that is the first government intervention and coercion in this federal labor law. And then you have, of course, forced dues, which is layered on top of that in the states. The 23 states that don't have right-to-work laws. So you'll be able to find that information there.
Okay. Thank you very much. No, that's all I have, Sam.
And, thanks, Chris. Patrick, one last quick point is that, you know, the second you agree to a union, if you're in a right-to-work state or not, especially if you're not, all kinds of other things trigger. So you kind of volunteer to be part of what you don't really realize is a whole myriad of complicated behind the scenes. They have a lot of laws and a lot of historical precedent, court cases, to draw up on, to Patrick, that makes it, it's literally like a shark tank when you get there, right?
Oh, yeah. It's specifically, you know, deliberately complicated so that, you know, individual workers can't get straight answers about what's going on. And yet, you know, when you have union lawyers running things and when things go wrong, they run to the federal government and get them to help them do their bidding.
All right. Thanks, Chris. Is there any other tidbits? You only got 2 minutes, Patrick. Is there anything else we ought to know before we talk next time?
Well, you know, next time we can get into some of the cases that are going on. Of course, the Janus is the 2018 decision that says public employees can't be required to pay money to a union. But unions all across the country are violating that. So we've had, I think, over 40 cases to enforce that already. You know, just getting one back to Chris's question, I think it's important to remember, you know, convicted criminals in this country have the right to choose their own representation. And yet we deny that right to just regular hardworking Americans who have union representation imposed on them. And I think that's just an important thing to remember of how twisted and coercive our federal labor laws are.
We'll dig into the cases next time, my friend. Thank you so much for staying extra time. Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Simmons. Thank you, sir.
All right. Glad to be with you again, Sam. Thanks.
Righttowork.org and crew doing a phenomenal job. Thanks. Shout out to them. Quick pause. More news. Liberty Roundtable Live.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt, and there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is going to be the power of love that saves us. I'm telling you right now, the love of the Savior, Jesus Christ. That's key, folks. Don't forget it in this crazy world where it just seems like there's division and hate everywhere. Don't fall for it. There's a lot of good, loving, Christian, faithful, law-abiding people out there that are making a difference day in and day out, and many of them are unsung heroes. You don't know about them, but the work they do is no doubt tremendous. Indeed, it's a marvelous work and a wonder, the efforts that are being made by a lot of people. All right, so there you have that. Let's see, I want to cover this here. In his first address to Congress, whacked out Joe Biden, Biden declared white supremacists posed the most lethal terrorist threat to the United States. Of all the different threats we could have in America, ladies and gentlemen, the most lethal is them white supremacists. Now, folks, don't get me wrong. There probably are people who are white supremacists who are literally white, and they believe that, you know, they're because they're white, they're better than everybody else. And because they're white, they're the superior or the Aryan nation race or whatever else. And I'm not here to attack people that believe that. I don't agree with you if you believe that. I think you're misguided if you believe that. But I still have a Christian heart towards you, even if you believe those, in my opinion, wrongheaded falsehoods. But at the same time, I don't really know any people who truly, openly, blatantly, completely believe that way. And I think that there are far and few between. I think there are some radicalized groups. But Antifa, Black Lives Matter, some white supremacist groups, there's extremism on both sides. As Donald Trump wisely pointed out, look, there's bad guys on both sides. There's also good people who have different beliefs, conservative, liberal, et cetera, et cetera. For example, I believe America is the greatest country on the face of the earth, not because we're white, but because we've learned to follow God's laws and follow principle. And when you do so, you're blessed. You get rewards. Okay. And when you follow proper principle, natural law blesses you, rewards you. Karma is the way the other side might say it. Those who aren't, you know, Christian focused. In other words, what you do follows you, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, imagine in your first address, as president, you're saying the white supremacists are the biggest threat we've got. Well, if that was just his opinion, that's one thing. I disagree with him. I think there's some wackos out there, but I don't think they're our biggest threat by any means. Personally, I'm starting to think government is our biggest threat. And I don't mean the legitimate, proper, or constitutional government. That's our biggest blessing. That's what allows us to prosper and be free. Okay, government has a purpose and a legitimate need. It fills the void, the vacuum. Hopefully with power that can repel a greater power that would be more tyrannical by nature, right? But I'm starting to believe that government's out of control when I hear all these stories about the FBI just abusing people left and right, all the way from Ammon Bundy to Michael Flynn to who knows who, right? Maybe you. Well, now Joe Biden is creating a secret police force to spy on Trump supporters and others online. Did you hear about this? I'm going to say it again. Joe Biden is creating a secret police force to spy on Trump supporters and conservatives online. Biden is eyeing private firms to help spy on Americans. Now, Art Moore, WorldNet Daily brings it up, but the DOJ considers seeking domestic terror law for the purpose. So what they're doing is they're backing into this terrorism ideology. They're backing into this white supremacist ideology. And they believe Donald Trump is a white supremacist, a racist. And they believe Christians are racists. All right. Here's what they say. Why do we need this power? Well, what do you do about ideology that's leading to violence, huh? That's what they're saying. What do you do about ideology that's leading to violence? And what they're doing with this, ladies and gentlemen, is they are backing into this narrative which will let them be unstoppable. It's kind of like the vaccine debate, okay? Where it's like, well, the reason that you got to take a vaccine is to protect me. The reason I take a vaccine is to protect you. Or the reason you wear a mask is to protect others. The reason they wear a mask is to protect you. And the reason that they pitch it like that, even though it's not truthful, is because then you can't really jettison their narrative. I mean, what, am I rejecting protecting you? See? And they trap you with this circular, dishonest, immoral logic. Where now it's like, hey, white supremacist, you're, well, if you believe in critical race theory, you are a systemic white supremacist racist. You can't help it. You probably don't even know it. And if you don't know it, you don't agree with it, that just proves that you are. And if you want evidence, well, that even proves you're even a greater racist. And they go on and on and on. Well, the problem with that whole scenario is that they say Jesus Christ was the biggest racist. Yeah. And how they get there? Well, there's all kinds of ways. Okay. I'll give you an example. They're saying Jingle Bells is racist now. Why? Well, you know, in the old days, they used to put bells on the slaves, using the N-word at the time, to make sure that if they tried to move and escape, we'd hear the bells and we could stop them before they hit the swamp. See? So Jingle Bells is a, you know, link back to the racist times of our nation. And see, and they go on and on and on and on with this kind of stuff. And no matter what, you cannot win the argument against vaccines, against the masks, against, because they frame the arguments in such a way, if you fall for it anyway, that you're just sidelined. Well, I mean, you don't want to hurt everybody else. That's why you got to wear a mask. What are you suggesting? That you have the right to hurt everybody else? Well, now Biden is eyeing private firms to spy on Americans. Yeah. They say, what do you do about an ideology that's leading to violence? So my ideology here, never mind the fact that I reject hate and promote love and reject violence and stand for peaceful restoration rather than revolution. And because I follow Jesus Christ and because I'm a Christian and because I'm white and because I'm a male and because I'm heterosexual, you know, I love my wife and okay, then I'm the enemy. And my rhetoric has got to be violent. See, that's where they're headed with this thing. And I personally think that if Donald Trump is literally eyeing private firms to help spy on the American people, Joe Biden creating a secret police force to spy on us because of the quote domestic threat relation. You know, if you believe in Donald Trump, you're insurrectionist by association to the big dog, to the big insurrectionist, Donald himself. See, and they're going along with this narrative. And if we let it stand, we're in real trouble, folks. I think we need to impeach President Biden right now. Because if he really is doing this, there's also allegations that he sent private communiques to the illegal aliens coming to our country, inviting them, contrary to the law in America. See, these things that are being done are treasonous. And they've already spied on Donald Trump. We know that, right? And now they're going to spy on every one of us? Well, you don't need to spy on me, FBI. You can go to libertyroundtable.com and download my radio programs. Okay, I'll even pay for the servers so that you can download them and everything else. Okay, you don't got to hide. But the problem is, when will they say my rhetoric? What about my ideology? Is it leading to violence? They would claim yes. I would claim they're off their rockers, right? I'm certainly not leading to violence. But they would say, you know, you've been kind to Donald Trump. You have, you know, talked a lot about the founding fathers. They were violent racists. Yeah. So that's what we're facing, folks. And Americans better, in my opinion, wise up to it ASAP. If we don't, it's going to get above us and be about impossible to stop. And it's interesting to me that, you know what, they're pursuing a continuation of the George Bush Republican policy. So I don't think the Republicans have escaped this, or that the Republicans could save you from this, because the Republicans, George Bush, started it all. George Bush and crew after 9/11 started the Patriot Act, right? George Bush and crew are the ones that spied on all of us and said, no, we're not, but then got caught lying, and the answer was, yes, you were, and yes, you are. Anyway, there you have that. We better wake up to this, and we better do it soon. You know, where does Biden get the authority to use private firms to spy on us? Think about your amendments to the Constitution, your Fourth and Fifth Amendments. But you know what? If they create a secret police force, what they'll do is they'll define us all as the enemy combatants. They'll define us all under the Patriot Act as lone wolves or whatever other language they use that have legal term ramification. And then they'll use that to marginalize each of us and say, well, we don't need to treat you like a citizen because you become a terrorist enemy combatant. And therefore, hey, different rules apply to you. We better beware, ladies and gentlemen, or people like me will be off the radio. All right, enough of that piece, but shame on Joe, and we need this to be transparent. We need more and more Americans to know about it and to push back, and really we need to start talking about impeaching Biden for even doing such a thing in the first place. All right, I guess there's a headline about police in Ontario, Canada. Police in Ontario, Canada have locked the doors of a church to stop in-person worship. Folks, this is getting bad. In my opinion, this is getting really bad. Right? Because if we can just flat out shut down a church, I know this is Canada, but we're starting to see, in my opinion, this problem where, you know what, you can't worship. We're going to force you to stop worship. They did this big time in California, and now they're doing it in Ontario, Canada. It's becoming a worldwide thing. They are trying to shut us down. And the more religious the efforts are, the more they want to shut us down, it seems. Okay? If you don't believe me, they're coming for the Christians. Why have churches been locked down and shut down the most? Bars and, you know, restaurants have been shut down a little bit, but not near as much. Strip clubs can stay open in California, but churches can't. Why are churches attacked the most? And the answer is because, in my opinion, that's where the solutions are. Solutions are not in politics. Solutions are not in the red or the blue or the conservative or the liberal. Solutions are in the principles of Almighty God and his love for his children, that's us, and for our opportunity to turn to him and repent and get guidance and protection, that's where the solutions lie. The solutions lie in getting married and having children, in families, in understanding the proper role of constitutional government and insisting on it, turning to God Almighty. It is that simple. It's God, family, and country. It always has been and always will be. Some would say, Sam, you oversimplify. And I say, yeah, maybe so, but you deny where the real solutions are. So what would you rather do, simplify or deny? Huh? I'd rather try to teach the principles, as simplified as they might be, to help people return to Christ. And when we do, blessings will be our companion and our result. Thanks for listening. I am Sam Bushman. LibertyRoundtable.com, LovingLiberty.net. Donate as liberally as you can, please. Every penny will be used to grow our presence in the media. We declare we the people can and will restore America. Will you help? God save the Republic of the United States of America.